Remember, we're talking and studying about the Eleusinian mysteries. I'm probably a very dumb one, but I had only vaguely heard the word, and it was something like, you know, it was something that was out of my consciousness. I had no idea what the Eleusinian mysteries meant until we started on this trek of the 12 labors of Hercules. But if you're in one part of scholarship, then you can, this will make sense to you. So much has been written about the Eleusinian mysteries, where? And for so long a time that a word is needed to justify this presentation of three papers, these are scholarly papers, allegedly, dealing with them. For close to 2,000 years, the mystery was performed continually. For carefully screened initiates in our fall, everyone speaking the Greek language was free to present himself, except only those who had the unexpiated blood of a murdered man in their hands. The initiates lived through the night in a temple of Eleusius, I cannot say that word, under the leadership of two hierophantic families. God ordained. The we don't care what their names are, the Eumolpids and the Kirkites. And they would have come all, and they would come away all wonderstruck by what they had lived through in that night. According to some, they were never the same as before. The testimony about that night of awe-inspiring experience is unanimous in history. Sophocles speaks for the initiates when he says, "Thrice happy are those mortals who, having seen those rites, depart for hell, for to them alone is granted to have a true life. For the rest, all there is evil." The mystery, 2,000 years, it's been 2,000 years since the last performance of the rite, and 4,000 years since the first. It's pretty wild.
Does anybody have any idea what the rites are?
You've been around the last few days?
Oh, we have an idea.
The ancient testimony about Eleusis is unanimous and unambiguous. The rite was the supreme experience in an initiate's life. It was both physical and mystical. Trembling, vertigo, cold sweat, and then a sight that made all previous sights seeing, or all previous seeing, seem like blindness. A sense of awe and wonder at the brilliance that caused a profound silence. Since what had just been seen and felt could never once be communicated at the punishment of death. Words are unequal to the task. Those symptoms are unmistakably the experience. Eleusinian mysteries. Where did they come from? Where did she go? Everybody get a Bible. Genesis, Book of Beginnings. Genesis 38.
That's my St. Louis story. Oh, that's really weird.
Came to pass.
What?
verse 13. Well, 12. In the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died, and Judah was comforted. Or finished the mourning process, and went up unto his sheep shears to Timnath, he and his friend Hira, the Adullamite.
That's as good as you got that test, Eleusis.
Adullamite.
Toy folk.
Judah.
Toy folk.
This is Judah. Judah is a biggie. The prophecies concerning Judah at the very beginning said that the Messiah had to come through Judah.
He was the son of
Jacob.
Okay.
One of the 12
yeah.
sons of Jacob. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
His wife died.
Is he the one who messed around with the...
Verse 13. And it was told Tamar, saying, behold, Tamar is his daughter-in-law.
Yeah, that's her.
But she, her husband died. Too.
Yeah, right.
Alright? And it was told Tamar, saying, behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear his sheep. And she put on her widow's garments off from her, and covered her with a veil, and wrapped herself, and sat in an open place, which is by the way to Timnath. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him to wife. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be a harlot,
yes, baby.
Because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way and said, now you probably are wondering,
how much?
You're probably wondering, what has this got to do with the Eleusinian mysteries?
Not really, it's a good story. I'm really not wondering at all.
I just want to hear what he asked her.
Yeah.
Actually,
this is better than the cornbread.
That hadn't crossed your mind?
She
remember, this is, we're studying the Eleusinian mysteries.
Oh,
Eleusinian mysteries.
When?
Just shut up, Jackie.
I like this. You said you're giving me a running commentary.
I know the story.
When Judah saw, it's probably the only story in the Bible you know.
No, I also know the story about one thing. He stabbed the real fat king so deeply that the knife handle disappeared into his fat. I know that story.
We got some really
I think
good.
That's what Judah's about to do.
Really we got some really good Bible scholars here.
What's his name?
I tried to tell my mother about that.
And he turned unto her by the way and said, go to. I pray thee.
Or go three.
Let me come in unto thee. For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what wilt thou give me that thou mayest come in unto me?
Does she mean like come into the house? Is that
what do you think, Harry?
And he said, I will send thee a kid from the flock. And she said, wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it? And he said, what pledge shall I give thee? And she said, thy signet, thy bracelets, and thy staff that is in thine hand. Now that's a biggie.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
He gave away his the promise of God to her, to a whore.
Just to get laid once?
How many? No, don't.
Come on,
see.
Jesus,
he's not giving away.
Where does it say? There's no time to be holier than thou.
Yeah, what else did you want?
Should not have. I would never have done that.
Lee certainly would never have done that.
Oh, yeah, I know.
No.
She did.
I would have given away the less important reason.
What pledge shall I give thee? And she said, thy signet, thy bracelets, and thy staff that is in thine hand. And he said, no, I can't do that, because that's God stuff.
No, I didn't say that.
Huh?
He didn't say that.
He didn't say that?
No. He gave it to her. It came in under her.
Boy, he wished he had said that.
That would have been the religious.
Is he in trouble for this?
He said, I heard that.
And he gave it to her and came in unto her, and she conceived by him.
She probably gave him a clean check.
And she arose and went away and laid by her veil from her, and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite. 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 To receive his pledge from the woman's hand. But he found her not. Locker room humor. Ed knows about that. But he found her not. Then he asked the men of the place, saying, "Where is that harlot that was openly by the wayside?" And they said, "There was no such harlot in this place." And he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." Lee, we have a custom around here. Then, especially if it's a very tall man's birthday, he gets to be the sergeant at arms.
Whack in.
I think you should whack in the staff.
There was no harlot in this place. And he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." And also the men of the place said, "There was no harlot in this place." And Judah said, "Let her take it to her, lest we be ashamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her." In other words, let her take it to her. In other words, lest we be ashamed, it means... It came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, "Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom." And Judah said, "Bring her forth and let her be burnt."
You just see this ugly scene developing.
When she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, "By the man whose these are, I am with child." And she said, "Discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet and the bracelets and the staff." And Judah acknowledged them and said, "She hath been more righteous than I, because that I gave her not to Shelah, my son, and he knew her again no more." And we're not studying all that stuff now, so don't worry about it. And it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. And it came to pass when she travailed that one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, "This came out first." And it came to pass as he drew back his hand that, behold, his brother came out. And she said, "How hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee." Therefore his name was called Phares, which means...
"This breach be upon thee."
"A breach be upon thee." And afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was called Zerah.
That's pretty amazing if you think about it.
It's pretty amazing. It's the second time it happened.
Yeah.
Now, go to Genesis 49.
What does Zerah mean?
Seed. Genesis 49, verse 8. Remember, this all happened to Judah. In verse 8 it says, Judah, and this is when Jacob called his sons and gathered them together that he may tell you what shall befall you. And that's the prophecies concerning Judah. They're all over in the Bible. Anyway, "Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thine hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp from the prey. My son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion. There's no lion who shall rouse him up. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come. Now, so we got the scepter is the law, the lawgiver. You understand it? And that has something to do with this weird scene that just happened with the harlot. Now, and that's enough. I want you to see something. About 1800 BC, Joseph was sold into slavery by the Midianites from the promise into Egypt. And Joseph became the second pharaoh of the land.
Vice pharaoh.
Yeah, but he was really the most powerful because the pharaoh just sort of hid out. Then he brought in all his relatives. And essentially around 1800, 1750. And they became into the land of Goshen, and the land of Goshen means the best of the land. And they, what I believe, became what's called the Hyksos dynasty. They became the rulers of Egypt. They became the pharaohs of Egypt. But the pharaohs came from the tribe that had the birthright and the law giving. And so they came from the other son of Judah.
First.
Yeah. So the Egyptians hated them because they just ruled. They adopted many of the Egyptian customs, but fundamentally they were always considered foreign kings. And if you've ever read Egyptian history, you know it's a big mess. About 150, maybe 110 to 150 years before what we know as the Exodus, where Moses led the people out, there was another Exodus. And it was when the old kingdom families, the old pharaohs of Egypt, overthrew the Hyksos. They had a coup. And it talks in history about this exodus that wasn't by land, it was by sea. And these were the royal families of the Empire of Egypt that had all the knowledge, the ancient mysteries with them of that Abraham had brought down, where Abraham had been trained on the island of Crete by Noah. Before Noah died, he'd had all of the ancient knowledge, the ancient mystery of math, of geometry, of astronomy, etc., etc. And Abraham brought all that knowledge. But so did these royal families of Egypt. When they departed, when they were overthrown as a dynasty, they departed. Well, where did they go? I'm convinced they went to Greece. And they established the city kingdoms that became Athens and Troy and Thebes, etc., etc., throughout the Grecian world.
These are the descendants of the firstborn of Judah.
Right. And, well, the whole, but it could have been the others too. I mean, it was all of the royal family. It was the royal aspect of the Hebrews.
Why do you think they went to Greece?
Well, they went other places too. But primarily they went to Greece. Because number one, it's nearest. Number two, it's neat.
Neat, like, pretty.
It's wonderful.
Nice Mediterranean.
It's great. It's wonderful. Wouldn't you want to go to Greece? I wouldn't go to Turkey. I certainly wouldn't go to Morocco. Wouldn't go to Algeria.
Yeah. Italy's
could go to Italy.
Oh, but anyway, so that... These then became a people that populated these city-states and city-kingdoms throughout the Grecian islands. And there's all kinds of theories about it, about that the war of Troy was really a war between two Hebrew families, on and on and on. But anyway, so here we have a bunch of these ancient guys that were descendants of Abraham, upon whom Abraham had revealed the mysteries of life. Abraham, remember, in the New Testament is called the perfect Christian. And so as time went on, these mysteries became popularized. And they had these great big Grecian festivals, as we've talked about before, the festivals at Eleusis were the biggies of the whole empire. And they lasted, this thing lasted from this time until shortly after Christ. So it was essentially for 2,000 years these mystery rites took place. Now it doesn't matter to their validity whether or not they originated from this twin of... You understand the reason that's important is because the twins that were conceived by Judah, upon whom the promise was made, through one of the lines of the twin came Jesus Christ. Through the other line of the twin came these royal families of Greece. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, you can follow it. It's fascinating. But I'm not going to go into all of the great detail. But do you have enough of an understanding to understand what I'm talking about? Okay, now, there's a theory that also said, while we're on this subject, let's go to Judges 20. That's a lot of reading just to explain this story. Let me just try to briefly explain it. So we got to start in Judges 19. Verse 1, it came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. Now, we're talking now about 1350 B.C., all this stuff, other stuff, had happened 350 years before, okay? What?
Does this mean the Levites can have...
You feel self-serving? And his concubine played the whore against him and went away from him unto her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah, and was there 4 whole months. And her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her, and to bring her again, having a certain... See, it just means the Levites can't have wives, they can only have concubines, but they only get one.
Okay, that's a lot of them. In a couple of asses.
And to bring her again, having his servant with him, and a couple of asses.
Levi had
a
servant.
And her husband arose, so it's like...
The concubine. And she brought him in unto her father's house, and when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. And his father-in-law, the damsel's father, retained him, and he abode with him 3 days, and he did eat and drink and lodge there. And it came to pass on the fourth day, when they arose early in the morning, that he rose up to depart. And the damsel's father said unto his son-in-law, comfort thine heart with a morsel of bread, and afterward go your way. And they sat down and did eat and drink both of them together. For the damsel's father had said unto the man, be content, I pray thee, and tarry all night, and let thine heart be merry. And when the man rose up to depart, his father-in-law urged him. Therefore he lodged there again.
And he arose early in the morning on the fifth day, and the damsel's father said, Comfort thine heart, I pray thee. And they tarried until afternoon, and they did eat both of them, and the man rose up to depart, and his concubine said, blah, 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 blah. I pray and stay and stuff, and anyway, verse 10, but the man would not tarry that night, but he arose and departed and came over against Jebus, which is Jerusalem. And there were with him two asses saddled, his concubine also was with him. And when they were by Jebus, the day was far spent, and the servant said unto his master, Come, I pray thee, and let us turn into the city of the Jebusites and lodge in it, etc., 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 etc. We've got to get to the good part. And verse 20, he's staying there, and he's eating and drinking and stuff. And then verse 23, the master of the house, went out unto them and said unto them, Nay, my, because they were trying to get to the, they wanted to bring forth the Levite to have sexual relations with them. They were bad guys. They were sort of like Sodom and Gomorrah. They wanted the Levite to pick up the soap. That's what the whole bottom line of this is.
Pick your feet up.
Huh?
Yes, it might be any easier being a Levite back
then. So, are you still in thrall of this story?
It's a good start.
I got two asses here.
Nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing this man is come unto mine house, do not do this folly. Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Them I will bring out now, and humble you them. And do with them what seemeth good unto you, but unto this man do not so a vile thing. The man would not hearken to them, so the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them, and they knew her, and abused her all night unto the morning, and when the day began to spring, they let her go. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day, and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was, till it was light. And her lord arose up in the morning and opened the doors of the house, and went out to go his way, and behold, the woman of his concubine, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. And he sent her up, and let us be going, but none answered. And the man took her up upon an ass, and the man rose and gat him into his place. And when he was come into his house, he took a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her, together with her bones, into 12 pieces, and sent her unto all the coasts of Israel. And so it was. And it was so that all that saw it said, There was no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it and take advice and speak your minds. That she was dead.
Okay.
And he was...
Now, was she the original concubine?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he, in his grief, took her and dissected her into 12 pieces. And sent a piece of her into each of the 12 tribes. Okay? Then all of the children of Israel went out, and the congregation was gathered together as one man from Dan even to Beersheba, and to the land of Gilead, unto the Lord at Mizpah. And the chief of all the people, even of all tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 footmen that drew the sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel were gone up to Mizpah, and then said the children of Israel, Tell us how that was this wickedness. And the Levite, the husband of the woman that was slain, answered and said, I came to Gibeah that belongeth to Benjamin, and I and my concubine to lodge. And the men of Gibeah rose against me, and beset the house round about upon me by night, and thought to have slain me, and my concubine have they forced that she is dead. And I took my concubine and cut her in pieces, and sent her throughout all of the country of the inheritance of Israel, for they have committed lewdness and folly in Israel. One of these days we're going to go into the meaning of this, which is other than what it looks like. Behold, you are all children of Israel. Give here your advice and counsel. And all the people rose as one man, saying, We will not any of us go to his tent, neither will we any of us turn into his house. But this shall be the thing which we shall do to Gibeah. We will go up thy lot against it. We will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, and 100 of 1,000, and 1,000 of 10,000, to fetch victuals for the people that they may go. When they come to Gibeah of Benjamin, according to all the folly they have wrought in Israel, so all the men of Israel gathered against the city, knit together as one man, and the tribes of Israel sent men throughout all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, What wickedness is this that is done among you? Now therefore deliver us the men, the children of Satan, which are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death, and put away evil from Israel. But the children of Benjamin would not hearken to the voice of their brethren and the children of Israel. But the children of Benjamin gathered themselves out of the cities into Gibeah to go out to battle against the children of Israel. And the children of Benjamin were numbered at the time out of the tribes 26,000 men that drew the sword beside the inhabitants of Gibeah, which were numbered 700 chosen men. And among all this people there were 700 chosen men left-handed. Every one could sling stones at a hair's breadth and not miss. Well, anyway, the first time Israel gets defeated in two battles with the Benjamites. During this time, then finally, the Benjamites are defeated. But almost all of the tribe of Benjamin left Israel at this time. They fled for their lives. This was 1350 B.C. They fled to Joppa, and they, I mean to, I won't go into it. Haifa, whatever it is now. And they fled, and history tells us that the tribe of Benjamin became what is known as the Spartans in history, on the one of the Grecian islands, right? Were they in the Greece?
Mm-hmm. Sparta.
Yeah. Sparta was in, yeah. Well, so now we got all these people that are called Greeks that are really descendants of Abraham. We got Spartans and all our games. We've got all of the royalty that has taken over all over the tribes of and the city kings of Greece. But all of them have been initiated into the ancient rites that Abraham knew and taught. And it's the rites of the bread and the wine. And they became the Eleusinian mysteries. But they originated back with our people. Now we'll study them next week.
So you say Abraham knew the rites of the bread and wine. Is this the stuff that's referred to where Melchizedek fed Abraham bread and wine?
Amen.
As opposed to Melchizedek, later the Passover thing?
Same thing.
Same thing.
The bread and the wine contain all of the mysteries of life. And we will see, hopefully, by the end of the time we spent studying these mysteries, what it was about them that caused this almost ecstasy. That once they'd been initiated into these rites, they were never the same. Let me just read one thing. Cicero. All of you know who Cicero was. Who was he?
He's a writer.
Where from?
He was an orator.
Where from?
Rome.
He was a Roman orator whose writings, he probably didn't write it, but his words were recorded as one of the most prominent things in history of that time, right? Cicero, 100 B.C. He said, quote, "Nothing is higher, nothing, no thing in the face of the earth is higher than these mysteries." And he was obviously an initiate, otherwise he couldn't have spoken of them. "They have sweetened our characters and softened our customs. They have made us pass from the conditions of savages to true humanity. They have not only shown us the way to live joyfully in this life, but have taught us how to die with a certain hope." Eleusinian mysteries.
This is sort of
4,000 years old. Lasted for 2,000 years. As long as, what?
You just quoted Cicero. Would you quote earlier? Sophocles?
No.
You said Sophocles.
Huh? Sophocles? Okay. Sophocles.
Right. So it's maybe he is what this. It's maybe he just wrote it.
And Clement of Alexandria, Christian.
Yeah. How come, I know this is stupid, but how come, like, in high school history or college history, I've never heard of the Eleusinian mysteries? It sounds like a big thing.
It's the biggest thing it was in ancient history.
We studied Paradise Lost without ever having the Bible mentioned. That's what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Because you have to study Cicero and Socrates and something, all of that.
It's probably assumed somewhere.
No, it's just that it's ignored because they just think it's an ancient. They call it. They may say it things like, "Well, they had these pagan rites, or they had these heathen rites, or
totally dismissed.
It's just dismissed. We'll find out.
I dismissed it, if I, you know.
We'll find. Well, I didn't know anything about it. I knew about Hercules, but I didn't know anything about the Eleusinian mysteries. Eleusinian mysteries. I can't pronounce it. One day.
How do you pronounce it?
I don't know.
Here's the way you pronounce it.
Let's look it up.
Eleusinian. Eleusinian. Can everybody say it? Eleusinian. Eleusinian mystery.
Did you make that up or do you know that?
I checked it out. See, I even put the pronunciation guide right there. What does it say?
Actually, I think it's a breed of cat.
Eleusinian. Okay.
Eleusinian. So that means you have to, I'll say it. Then you can just move it wherever I said it, miscorrect it, you misquoted it, you just edit.
Drop it in.
Eleusinian. That's a weird night. But it's interesting. I just wanted to give you that sort of a thumbnail sketch of ancient history to get us to where these things came from, I think. I think if I'm right, Abraham spent his youth on the island of Crete, sent there by Nimrod, because on the island of Crete was this wizened old man who knew all the mysteries of life.
Ha!
Well,
we got that.
Who?
Holy Shem.
Part of it was Shem and Noah. Both of them were.
That's why. Never mind.
And no, on this island. He was. I mean, you can show in the genealogy that he was alive for like, I don't remember what it was, like 75 years of, see, his life was, he and Shem's lives were simultaneous with Abraham's for like 60 or 75 years. And so, and he, the Noahic kingdom or whatever, was the island of Crete. And there's all kinds of weird mysteries that come from there. There's a word for it. What's the
Cretan stuff?
Starts with an M. Anyway.
Manoa.
Huh? Yeah, the Manoan mysteries.
The one that sank.
Yeah, a cool star for Harry.
That's pretty good. I'm proud of you.
I watch TBS,
man. The Manoan mysteries, who, or Manoan civilization, which Noah was the founder of. Or in Babylonian, Noah is called Gilgamesh.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Now, I didn't make this stuff up, folks.
There's another story that has an old man, and they go and find him, and he's far
away. Yeah, I didn't make this stuff up, I promise you. I'm just not like a scholar that goes around and footnotes everything. But
I feel like...
Anyway, the point of this is that these mystery, the mystery of the bread and the wine, are the earliest mysteries. It started from, but they have to be seen together, or you miss the point. And it's still what we do whenever we do it, the afkaman. We are, if we could have eyes to see, we'd be a partaker of those mysteries.
That one paragraph we saw in the pamphlet about the books and those later by Noah, did it say in the 5th year, I mean, pick one?
I don't remember. Okay?
Yay.
Okay, take a big guy. See you.